Welcome to Bedhampton Church. Contact us at www.bedhampton.church. But for now, let's continue that journey with this input.
Much to be said, we're looking at the moment at the book of Exodus, and if you haven't already got your copy of Exodus for Many People, I do strongly recommend you buy one, read it. It is such an easy read. And over the coming weeks, we're going to be focusing on one chapter a week. Okay, so you don't have to read the whole book in one go. I also strongly recommend this book, and that you read this book. In particular, the book of Exodus. I reckon all of it. It's a bestseller. Do read it as much as you can. The book of Exodus that we're delving into at the moment, each week, do take the time just to read part of Exodus. And this week, we're looking at Exodus chapter 1 and chapter 2. That's all we're looking at. So each week, you don't have to read the whole of the book of Exodus. But if you want to, go ahead, read it. Because you can read it again and again and again. And every single time I pick the Bible up and read, I learn something new. And I see something new. And as we're looking this week at Exodus chapter 1 and 2, I had the choice of what reading I was going to give you. And I was really tempted to do the whole of chapter 1 and the whole of chapter 2. Really tempted, but I thought, I can't do that. So I kept reading and reading and reading to see what part of this do I want to bring to you this week. And the simple message is all of it, which is why you have got a sheet that you were given when you came in. Okay? I also would strongly recommend that when you come to church, you bring with you a Bible and you bring with you a pen. So you can be writing down and taking notes, because what God says to you through the passage is going to be different to what he says to the person next to you. And if you are a couple and you're both taking notes, then over your Sunday lunch, talk. What did God say to us today? What did he say to us today from that passage? And what I've done on the first part of the sheet, that first paragraph, gives you a summary of what happens before our reading. So last week, Max, if you were here, you listened to him talking about Exodus from 30,000 feet. And for me, there were three takeaways from that, three big ideas. Yahweh and Yahweh alone is worthy of Israel's worship. And the Israelites were commanded to worship Yahweh exclusively. He says Saviour, and also he's the Creator God. And that the Exodus, he is taking the people out of Egypt, he's saving them to recreate them. Exodus is a recreation which ties salvation to God's act of creation. And it's a big deal in Exodus, and it's a big deal in the Gospels. And thirdly, that God's mountain, Sinai or Horeb, because as you read the Bible, you will notice the same things are sometimes called different names. Just to confuse us. But God's mountain is where people are called to worship God. They're called out of Egypt so they can make their way to the mountain to worship him. And then we actually get into the book of Exodus. And Exodus 1 starts, it says, this is the names of the sons of Israel who went to Egypt with Jacob and with his family. And it lists them. And hopefully we've got a picture of them. So we have got the 12 sons of Jacob, but actually there were 70 descendants of Jacob, who we also know is called Israel. So yet again, two names for the same person. 70 descendants went to Egypt. And then it says in verse 8, a new king came who didn't know about Joseph. And he looked to his people and he said, look, these Israelites are becoming so numerous. We need to do something about them, because otherwise they're going to take over us. The new king felt threatened by the prolific population of Israelites. And do you remember Genesis chapter 15, where God promised to Abraham that he would make his descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky? And here we have, just one book later, we see so many descendants that the Egyptians are worried. And Pharaoh's way to control those Egyptians was to enslave them. Let's put them into slavery. Because if we enslave them, we're going to control them. And that's the only way we can control these Israelites so they don't take over our land. But you know what? Pharaoh made a massive mistake. Because when you pick a fight with God, you're not going to win. And Pharaoh unwittingly was picking a fight with God. As we go through the book of Exodus, we'll see how that fight plays out. And we'll see that the Pharaohs do not come out on top. And the more Pharaoh oppresses the people, it says in Exodus 1 verse 12, the more he oppressed them, the more they multiplied and spread. He could not get rid of these Israelites. He oppressed them and they kept on reproducing. And they kept on reproducing. And then we come to a bit I love. What about the women? The women have a great role in this passage. And first of all, we're going to meet two women, Shipra and Pua. And Shipra and Pua were midwives. And the midwives feared God. Pharaoh said to them, I want you to control these Israelites and the population. So if a boy is born, you've got to kill it. But Shipra and Pua feared God more than they feared Pharaoh. And their excuse to Pharaoh when he called them and said, look, all these boys are still being born. What's going on? And they just said, I'm really sorry, Pharaoh, but these Israelite women are not like Egyptian women. They're very vigorous in childbirth, and the boys just come out before we get there. It's not our fault, Pharaoh, because they feared God. They feared God more than they feared a man. So then Pharaoh gave the order to all his people, every boy that's going to be born has got to be thrown in the Nile. But you can let the girls live. Get rid of the boys, but the girls can live. Do we have anything else in the Hebrew Bible where we have a king who's trying to get rid of the boys, but we let the girls live? Think of King Herod. Yeah, in the New Testament, King Herod wants to get rid of the boys because that's what they thought. When there's a threat, let's get rid of the men. But we'll keep the women. We then meet two more women. We meet Jochebed and Miriam. But actually, in this passage, we don't get told their names. We just get told there was a man in the house of Levi married to a Levite woman. And we know the house of Levi. What's important about the house of Levi? What was their role? They were the priesthood. And so a man and a woman from the house of Levi, so she became pregnant and she gave birth to a son. And when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. And that bit there, he was a fine child. The word fine there is the Hebrew word tov. And in the book of Genesis, that word is used, but it's not translated as fine, it's translated as good. And we hear that in the creation story. God looked at creation and he said it was good. It was tov. And here we have Jochebed looked at her son and he was tov. He was good. He was fine. And she hid him for 3 months, but when she couldn't hold him any longer, she found a papyrus basket and she put him in the Nile. So yes, he was put in the Nile. So Pharaoh's orders were delivered. The baby was put in the Nile. And Miriam hid in the reeds. And then Pharaoh's daughter comes along and she finds the baby and she brings him out. And she sees Miriam there. Oh, you're a Hebrew. Can you go and find me a Hebrew woman who can nurse this child for me? And so Moses is given back to his mom. and she raises him until he's old enough to go and live with Pharaoh's daughter. We then get to the passage that we had read to us today. One day after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his people were and he watched them at their hard labour. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own, and glancing this way and that and checking that nobody was around, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. I love this because the first thing, the first action we get of Moses as an adult, the first thing we're told about him is he's a murderer. So when you sit and you think, I've got nothing that I can give to God. I've done so many things wrong in my life. There's nothing I can do. He won't take me. God does take people who make mistakes. He took Moses, the murderer. And as we go through the book of Exodus, we'll see not only was Moses a murderer, he made all sorts of excuses, he tried to get out of things, but God used him. God takes the weak things of this world and he uses them for his glory. Doesn't that give all of us hope? If God can take Moses, he can take us. And just ask God this week, what does he want you to do? Hopefully you don't take it that I can go and murder somebody and then it'll be okay, because that's not what I'm saying, but God can take us and he can use us. And then Pharaoh finds out, and Pharaoh's not happy, and so he's going to kill Moses. So Moses flees, and it just says he fled to Midian. Now I had to put a map in here, because I had no idea where we were. So Moses starts on the left in Egypt and he flees. You follow the red line, he fled to Midian. That's about 900 miles. It's not a quick, I'm fleeing from Bedhampton to Havant, I'm fleeing to Portsmouth, I'm fleeing to Chichester, I'm fleeing to Southampton. It was 900 miles. He didn't have a bike, he didn't have a car, he didn't have a train, he didn't have an aeroplane. That is not a quick journey to flee to Midian. But we just have it in one verse. He fled to Midian. And then we get, when he's fleeing to Midian, we have this lovely, lovely passage where he's sitting down at a well. And a priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came to draw water to fill troughs for their father's flock. And some shepherds came along and drove them away. But Moses got up and came to their rescue and watered their flock. And sometimes I wonder, why is that story in there? What's this story telling us? Moses standing up to the bullies. Moses rescuing the daughters. And it said, the daughters of Reuel. Another person who is always got different names. Because later he's called Jephthah, just to confuse us. And the girls went back to their dad, and he came back early. Why are you back early? Well, we were down at the well, and this Egyptian got rid of those shepherd bullies, and he watered our sheep for us. And so Jethro and Reuel said, well, where is he? Why haven't you invited him home? So they went and got Moses, and they invited him to have something to eat. And Moses agreed to stay with that man who gave his daughter Zipporah to Moses in marriage. Again, I don't think that just happened in one day. I think this is a period of time of Moses being welcomed into that family and then being given Zipporah, daughter in marriage. And it said Zipporah gave birth to a son, and Moses named him Gershom, saying, I've become an alien in a foreign land. And that's because the Hebrew for Gershom sounds like an alien here. And if you read the Bible, you will know that names are always important. Names always have a meaning. So it gave place to Gershom because he's an alien, because he was not in the land where he should have been. And then it says in verse 23, during that long period, so we know it was a long period, we know it wasn't a matter of weeks, Moses transported, meets Zipporah, they have a baby. No, it's a long period of time. And during that long period, the king of Egypt died. The Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out, and their cry to help went up to God. Their cry went up to God. You know, whenever we cry out for help, our cries go up to God. And God heard their cry. It says, God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham and with Isaac and with Jacob. And I don't think that means God was an old man and a forgetful God, and he suddenly thought, oh yeah, I remember that. I think more, it's actually they were brought to the forefront of his mind. They were brought to the importance of him. And so God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. Probably was concerned, yes, because the Israelites were in slavery. And they were calling out to him and they were groaning. But you know, I love not just looking at one translation of the Bible. Because I think when we have our translations, we miss some of the richness of the language. If we were all Hebrew scholars and we're reading in Hebrew, we wouldn't have this issue. But we're not. We're reading it in English. And in the NIV, God looked on them and was concerned about them. I looked in the New King James, and the same verse says, God looked upon the children of Israel and God acknowledged them. He was concerned about them in the NIV and he acknowledges them in the New King James. It's a different nuance, isn't it? And then if we look at the message, God saw what was going on with Israel. God understood. We have an all-powerful and an all-knowing God. He understood. The New Living Testament. I did nothing. I didn't touch anything, honestly. He looked down on the people of Israel and he knew it was time to act. That's a different nuance again, isn't it? It's time. It's time for something to happen. It's time to act. And then the ESV. God saw the people of Israel and God knew. Our God knows. Our God knows when it's time to act. Our God hears our cry. He hears our groaning. And as we move on in the coming weeks, in the rest of the book of Exodus, we will see how that God, our God, Yahweh, responds to his people.
You have been listening to Bedhampton Church. Our prayer is that this helps you journey with Jesus and serve your community by sharing God's love and friendship. Subscribe and join us for more discussion at www.bedhampton.church. All material Creative Commons copyright. Contact us for more details.